Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, September 24th, 2018, and this is episode 155 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. This is it, ladies and gentlemen. We are heading down the final stretch, the final leg. They're coming around the corner. The season is almost over, and it's going to come to hopefully a merciful end. But here to talk about it with me today is Eric. Welcome back.
Ooh, doggy, it's almost time to put this dog to bed.
I know, right? As the horses are coming around the stretch, you almost want to take out your rifle and just, you know, just end it. End it early.
End that misery, yes.
I mean, they only got six games left, but do we really want to go through the torture of this? I don't know. But we are still here, okay? It was another bad week for Giants baseball, but we are committed to doing this. And we're here today to talk about the week that was. The Giants are now at 72-84, a full 12 games under 500. They've lost four straight after taking the first two in San Diego. They lost four out of six on this recent road trip and, of course, got swept in St. Louis. They are definitely locked into fourth place for the rest of the season. The Dodgers are still a game and a half ahead of Colorado, and the Diamondbacks have now officially been eliminated from the NL West. So it's really just the two-horse race right now. But yeah, Eric, you wrote it right here. Cardinals series sucked. Cards are clearly a playoff, you know, team. The Giants are not. And it's just, it sucks because the Giants and the Cardinals have so much history behind them in terms of their playoff rivalry. And it's just fun when those two teams get together. And I checked out St. Louis a couple years ago. I took a tour of Busch Stadium and kind of got a little more of a connection to that area. And the people were so great down there. And the baseball culture and history is so rich there. And, you know, I like them. I like the Cardinals for who they are and what they are. And it just sucks when your team just, it can't hold a candle to them. I mean, they just were completely and utterly outplayed in every facet of the game.
Well, I give the Giants credit. I watched the first two games closer than the third one, thankfully. And they did their job, like their due diligence. A team that was out of it played a team that is in a race hard and then just kind of faded at the end. I mean, they gave up two runs late. Melanson gave up two base runners with two outs, I believe, on Friday night. And then again on Saturday, Melanson lets up the home run in the bottom of the 10th. Yeah. Again, he couldn't close out that inning. So, like, each time, and then Sunday, they looked like they were beaten. And that's what you can hope for is two out of three that they play tough. And
yeah,
I mean, the Giants did, but I noted it here. They left 25 men on base over the weekend, like 11 of them on Saturday, something like 8 of them on Friday. So that comes back to bite you after a while, and that's why good teams like the Cardinals will win and the Giants will lose. It was good to see somewhat, quote-unquote, meaningful baseball. Mm-hmm. It's a little more entertaining than like when the Giants and Padres got together at the beginning of the week and you knew both teams were out of it. And so it was just kind of like, all right, I'm going through the motions, watching the games. It's more entertaining when at least one of the teams has something to play for. But the Giants, they just looked like the inferior team all weekend long.
They did. They did play them tough the first two games, but you could just tell they were playing on fumes. And, you know, they have a depleted roster, even with all the September call-ups. So it's hard to match the Cardinals, and the Cardinals are still playing to be in the playoffs, so they have a lot of fire. The young kids, you know, from San Francisco, they played their hearts out. They just can't match it, and they did go into extra innings in that second game. Third game, they got blown out, but the overall result is a sweep, and that's just what looks so bad. It's like you want to be competitive, but at the same time, there's got to be results. I mean, if you got to take one out of three just to at least show some gumption, you know what I mean?
But,
you know, close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, you know, so it's like they were close. They still lost, and they lost all three. The sadder thing about this is just overall that closed out their road trip or their road schedule for the season. All 81 games. These are the last six. And, of course, they have six more at home right now. And after winning those first two in San Diego, you're thinking, all right, you know, at least maybe they can end up with a winning road record, which, again, has only happened, what, one time this year, right? And when they went 4-2 on a road trip a couple of weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. Maybe they can, you know, kind of have a little bit of saving grace on the road. Nope, they tripped, fell flat on their face, lost those four in a row. And more, I guess it's not important, but more noticeable is that they reached 50 losses for the season. And that's a significant number.
Yeah, it takes a lot. I mean, it's halfway to 100. And we know that there's only been one 100-loss team. There's only been six Giants teams that have lost 50-plus games on the road the entire time there's been a 162-game schedule. Yeah. And this is the second year in a row it's happened, too. It happened last year. They went 26-55. The other times they did it just randomly was 96. They were 30-50 under Dusty. Mm-hmm. 92, 30-51 under Roger Craig. 85 was their worst. They were 24-57 on the road. Wow, that's bad.
Yeah, that was a really bad year.
Jimmy Davenport, and then he was fired midseason. And in 84, Frank Robinson was only 31-50. But that's it. That's the whole list of seasons where the Giants have lost 50-plus games on the road. And this year is it. Yeah. I was telling you before we came on air, before the weekend series against the Cardinals started, I wrote down all the Giants teams in history with a 162-game schedule that had lost 47, 48, 49, and 50-plus. And I ended up crossing off 2007, 2006, 91. I ended up crossing off six other years as they went through the weekend of teams that they passed and they lost more games then.
It's so sad.
You know, that they got worse then in a sense.
Oh, man. Yeah, you're thinking, well, they'll be around 47 or 48. Maybe 49 if things really go bad. And I was like, no. They decided to make a clean sweep of it. Yeah, this is the last time it happened back-to-back was 84 and 85. Like you said, sixth time overall. And the other thing is that this is their first back-to-back losing seasons in 10 years. This hasn't happened since 08 and 09, or 07 and 08. And so it's sad in the sense of it's been a long time. You know, it's been a nice little run. Even the years that they didn't make the World Series, they didn't necessarily have the worst team. They may have had a losing season, but the next year they just kind of bounced back. And you always realize they restructured, they regrouped, and they came back at it. Even 2016... at least they made the playoffs, and they got bounced in the first round by the Cubbies after the wild card win. It's unfortunate, and I don't see this changing anytime soon. We're going to get a little bit of kind of what's going on here with the roster and moves that might be made in terms of the front office. But I don't see anything on the horizon that promises any significant change in the record. I mean, that's just my feeling. I don't know what you think.
No, I mean, you hope the Giants can play fun games against the Padres and then be competitive over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Right now, the team that we're watching is not going to be the team we see in the spring.
No.
So might as well enjoy certain things like the young kids and how they're playing. Bumgarner's getting the start against the Dodgers. D-Rod's getting one more start against the Dodgers. I believe Derek Holland goes tonight and, you know, kind of celebrate him and his season. And what he's meant to the team. I believe he's going to have the most innings pitched on the Giants this season. And Derek Holland was a minor league free agent signing in the offseason. And there he is. And Derek Rodriguez, another minor league free agent signing, has been their best pitcher overall. You know, those are the kinds of things to look at and celebrate. You know, if they're going to go like 2-4, 3-3, you know, who the hell knows? Maybe 4-2. Who knows if the Dodgers games are going to mean anything? You know.
Yeah, and that it's frustrating. I mean, I was really pulling for the Rockies in that Rockies LA series, and LA pulled those last two games out, and that was a significant swing in the standings because everything that should have been a Rockies win or could have been a Rockies win is a two-game swing. So, and the Dodgers lead by a game and a half. So even if the Rockies had snagged one of those games, the Rockies would be up by a half game right now. But if they had both of those games, the Rockies are the ones that would have been up by 2.5 right now. So, you know, that was significant. And it may not mean anything if the Rockies tank this this week and the Dodgers do well. But hopefully they're within a game. That's what my hope is. The Rockies are within a game of the Dodgers, and the Giants have something to play for. The Giants have a reason to beat them. The Giants have a reason to knock them out. You know, Joe Morgan a la, Candlestick Park home run in the 80s, that kind of thing. I mean, that's what the Giants need to close out the season.
Yeah, the way it's looking, too, with the fact that the Giants stunk against St. Louis and recently also stunk against Milwaukee, it looks like St. Louis and Milwaukee are closing that out. So the loser of the West might not even be able to sneak into the wild card. So it could be vitally important for the Dodgers this weekend. I hope it's within at least a game when the weekend starts. Make it something. Make it fun.
Yeah.
Because the Giants don't have much left.
Yeah, because if it's three or more games, I mean, obviously if the Dodgers have clinched by then, which would be very hard to do, to be honest, mathematically clinched, then it doesn't matter. But, you know, if they have a 2.5, well, I guess it can't be a half game at that point. If it's a 2-game lead, it's going to be rough. It's going to be really hard because the Giants would pretty much have to sweep the Dodgers and the Rockies would have to sweep. I don't know who they're ending the season.
Where is it? Washington.
Washington? Okay, yeah. Well, they're playing Philadelphia right now for 3 and then Washington. So they don't have the easiest road left. LA's got Arizona and, of course, the Giants after that. So, but you're right. I mean, you look at Milwaukee and St. Louis, and it was kind of sad because it was like Milwaukee came in and swept the Giants, and then the Giants go to St. Louis and get swept. So they basically had a net zero effect on the wild card race.
The central teams just got to keep going along doing what they're doing, and the Giants didn't even bother them.
The Giants did not affect that race whatsoever. 3-0. Okay, well, they're still 2 games apart. It's kind of funny because, you know, if the Giants had performed a little bit better, could have tightened up that race a little bit. But I think you're right. I think it looks like the winner. I mean, Milwaukee and St. Louis are going to beat each other up a little bit this weekend. So if Milwaukee takes off and sweeps St. Louis, then Colorado or L.A. has a chance to sneak in as the second wild card. But let's say St. Louis takes 2 out of 3 because it's at St. Louis. Then they're going to be a game back of Milwaukee, and they're going to potentially stay the same 1.5-2 games ahead of Colorado or LA heading into that final series. So I think you're right. I think the loser of the West is probably out of the playoffs. So I think West is the only way that the Rockies or the Dodgers can go at this point.
It'd be so cool though if the Giants, you know, could somehow sweep this weekend and knock the Dodgers out in some way, shape, or form.
Just some way. I know. And the other thing is, of course, you don't want the Dodgers celebrating at AT&T Park. That's a double whammy. You know what I'm saying? I know we don't have a pool out in AT&T Park where they can go jump in like they did in Arizona, but it just sucks when they clinch. When they clinch on your turf.
All right, this would be if the Dodgers win the title. This is their sixth straight division title. Have they clinched at San Francisco for any of them?
I believe one of them they did, and I could be mistaken, but I seem to recall they did it one time, but it was way ahead of time, you know what I mean? And gotcha. I remember it being kind of anticlimactic, so it wasn't that big of a deal. It was like, oh, they were going to win the West anyway. But coming down to the last weekend of the series, you know, the last series of the season, there's a little bit more pressure on the Dodgers right now. So, I mean, it could conceivably be a super tight race going into that final weekend, and so if they beat the Giants 2 out of 3 to clinch the West, you know, they're gonna go apeshit. There's no doubt about it. Like anyone would in that situation. It was kind of like, you know, when Boston and Cleveland clinched their divisions. It was like, yay, here's your hat, here's your shirt. All right, so what's for dinner? I mean, it was so anticlimactic because, you know, it was locked up for 2 months for each of those teams. So one of the big things we talked about last week was the amount of strikeouts that the entire league has been, you know, going through. We're going to have the first season in Major League history in which there are going to be more strikeouts than hits. And the Giants are no exception to that. They are certainly huge contributors. And this road trip was a microcosm of their season. They had 69 strikeouts in 6 games. I mean, that's more than 11 per game on average. And they only had 54 hits. And in St. Louis, they had 36 strikeouts and only 24 hits. So 50% more hits. I mean, that's crazy. And on the road trip, they had 16 strikeouts in a game twice. 2 times. One in San Diego and one in St. Louis. And so for the entire year, they're up to 1,411 strikeouts versus just 1,286 hits. I mean, Eric, Jesus Christ, man. These numbers are just baffling. Even just a few years ago, I would have never dreamed of seeing these horrific numbers. And it really is hurting the game. I mean, really, it's not just the Giants. It's obviously a problem across all of baseball. But it just sucks because you're watching this game with all of the shifts and and the power. So yeah, the power is exciting, but at the same time, there's only something like 40 balls are hit in play now. You know, most of the time it's just a strikeout or a walk, you know, and then an occasional hit or you know, F7 thrown in there. And so it really has slowed the game down a lot, and it makes it where only half the game is interesting. Half the game is just an automatic out or a walk.
There doesn't seem to be – there's just not as many holes for the hitters to find because of the shifts. You know, there's not those slap hits that are just out of the reach of one infielder, because now the way that they're positioned in shifts, that area is covered by a different fielder. And so, like, to compensate, I guess, is where the launch angle came from, which is where – the strikeouts end up coming from. And I'm just cursory looking over this list right now of strikeouts. The Giants have the fifth most strikeouts in baseball. But of all the teams on the list, one through at least 12, 13 here, they all have more strikeouts than hits. Yeah. It's not until the Cubs, who have more hits than strikeouts than on anyone on this list. It's just the way baseball has gone. I think it's the cyclical aspect of it. We're missing the put the ball in play and things happen thing, because half the time you put the ball in play where things used to happen, they don't happen anymore.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many times still, I don't know if it happens to you, I'm watching a game and a ball gets hit up the middle, and right when the batter makes contact, you know instinctively it's right up the middle, and you're like, all right. And then all of a sudden there's a guy just standing right there, and you're like, damn, that used to be a base hit. So I feel like the strikeouts come from the compensating for that, and then the Giants don't have the power to do that. And then the Giants, for some reason, they're just less comfortable hitting on the road. They averaged almost 10 strikeouts a game, 9.79 strikeouts a game on the road, compared to 8.24 at home. Like, that's a big difference. That's a strikeout and a half per game.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the unfamiliar hitting environments or what it is, but the Giants as a whole tend to strike out a lot, and when you're not getting the power production, it's glaring, and it leads to so many missed opportunities. Like, the Giants can knock the ball all over the yard, but if nobody hits it over the fence or nobody gets that clutch hit, it doesn't freaking matter.
Yeah. I mean, that ties into the leaving 25 men on base over the weekend, and I forgot to mention, and you put this in there, one of our YouTube listeners, Santa Ana Canyon, had asked a question about, hey, you know, the Giants leave a lot of guys on base. And so you looked that up, right? And where they rank?
Yeah, they do leave a lot of guys on base. But, it's funny because they do, but they score the least amount of runs of generally anybody that does. Giants have left 1,070 runners on base, and that's 10th in baseball. Like, the Cubs are first. Here's context. They've left 1,174 runners on, so that's 104 more runners on than the Giants. But the Cubs have 1,391 hits. The Giants only have 1,286. They have 100 less hits. Yet the Cubs have left 100 extra runners on. So the Giants have to work hard at leaving runners on base.
It's a good point. It's a really good point. It's like you actually got a hit to leave runners on. You know what I mean? Oh, I apologize. I was supposed to turn that off.
And they work hard. And you look at the amount of runs scored from teams on this list. Again, the Giants are at the bottom. The Giants have scored 589 runs this season. Contrast that to, say, the Cubs, 730 runs. That's 140 more runners that are scoring that aren't even being left on base. So that's 244 more runners that the Cubs are accounting for already than the Giants are. You know, the coming into the season, hitting we thought was what was shoring up, and we weren't sure about the pitching staff. And it's weird. By the end of the season, here we are looking at stats that just show the hitting has been horrible and the pitching has been pretty good.
Yeah, no doubt. At least there was one bright spot on the road trip. The Giants did win the first two on the road. But Hunter Pence seems to have a little bit of a renaissance just this last kind of couple weeks of the season. I don't know if he's eaten his Wheaties or what, or he realizes this is his kind of swan song, his last tour, his last time in the gray roadie for the Giants. But this was a mammoth home run that he hit in San Diego.
High drive! Left field! It's going to hit the scoreboard! Out of here! The Giants take the lead.
I can't wait to see the numbers on this thing.
I just love Mike Kruko in the background just going, oh, Lord.
Chuckling at it. Yeah, the numbers showed it was like the 10th or 11th longest home run for a Giant in the Statcast era. He absolutely crushed it. It was shades of old Pence. And it was nice to see him do it in front of a lot of fans, because if he doesn't get one while he's at home, you know, at least that'll be his last one in front of a bunch of Giants fans.
Yeah, yeah. And he's been doing pretty well lately. So 5 for his last 14. So it is what it is. He acknowledged that he knows this is it with the Giants. And he has come out and officially stated that he does want to play next year. We'll see. I'm sure someone's going to take him as a non-roster invitee kind of thing and just see how he does. But and maybe he'll feel it out himself, and he can make the decision at the end of spring training. You know, if he makes a roster, great. If he doesn't, is he going to toil in the minor leagues?
Probably not.
Probably not at this point. He's made so much money. He's got his wife, his new wife, and, you know, she's got this little vlogging thing. They've got their coffee shop slash arcade business that they're starting in Texas. They got a lot of endeavors going on, and I think that, you know, maybe it's time for him to just hang it up and move on to the next part of his career, which he's going to be very active in, and we're still going to see Hunter Pence around all the time, certainly on social media, so he's not going to go quietly, that's for sure.
I'll just say, watching him this week will be one of my favorite things, because I hope the fans soak him up, I hope they give him proper applause, and I hope Hunter goes deep once for his sake, so that he gets, you know, the roar, and he'll get a curtain call if he goes deep one more time. Even if they're losing 9-3, he'll get a curtain call if he homers one more time. I think the fans will show him that love.
Yeah, we've seen this, as you know, other Giants through the World Series years have kind of had their final season here, and they give, you know, the Giants fans are good in that regard. They do, no matter, you know, even Barry Zito, right? No matter all of the troubles that he had and how bad of an albatross contract that was, there were still a few moments that were worth applauding his efforts in terms of, you know, so let's say the 2012 playoffs, that kind of thing. And so he was given a nice send-off. A lot of other people have been given nice send-offs as well. So they're going to definitely do that for Pence this weekend. So, yeah, with all these problems, and you touched upon him earlier, Mark Melancon, the guy who can't close, you know, Johnny Cueto, he's always been a horse. Boom, now he's out until 2020. Jeff Samardzija with all of his issues, both medically and performance-wise, and then just a lot of the contracts they still have left. A lot of these more recent contracts have actually been put in place and agreed to by GM Bobby Evans, and I think, you know, there were so many problems earlier in this year, and we touched upon this last week, that even Brian Sabian, who they've, you know, called kind of the godfather, kind of stepping back into the shadows to kind of oversee things, he even took a more prominent role back into the GM role this year. And so there's clearly, there have been signs in this past year that Bobby Evans is just, his performance is not being appreciated by the brass. And I think they've kind of given him some extra line here, but rumors have it in the last couple of days that they're looking for a new GM right now, and that Brian Sabian would step back into those shadows of the godfather role, and most likely both Bochy and the others would be back from the front office. So what do you think? Do you think this is warranted?
Well, I'm sitting here thinking about it, and all this time over the last couple of years, I had never even considered that the Giants would get a different GM and keep Sabian in his role until now. And then as you're talking, I'm thinking back on all the moves that Bobby Evans has made, and none of them really have worked out.
No.
Cueto is really the best signing, and they've only got like a year and a half of him healthy.
Yeah.
And that's it. Austin Jackson was a mess this year. The Melancon, oh my God. I mean, this weekend, like, I tried last podcast. I tried on Twitter. I tried to talk good stuff about Mark Melancon. But the guy just, he doesn't know how to close. I don't understand what it is. He can't get it when there's two strikes and two outs. He can't get the third strike, the third out. He can't get the last out of the game. I don't know what it is, but the man just, he can't close. He doesn't have that killer instinct. And it's signings like that, Jeff Samardzija, that are all falling in Bobby Evans's lap. And I guess it's fair. I really do. If Sabian's going to stay on in that godfather role, I have to wonder how much say he's going to have. And you also have to wonder what kind of direction they're going to go. Will the new guy be more analytical? Will he be as old school as Sabian? Will they try to get somebody analytical so they can integrate Sabian's old school techniques? You know, there's a lot of questions. And then Bochy, he's only got the 1 year left on his contract. So yeah. Is the GM told, you know, okay, it's a lame duck manager. You're just going to get 1 year Bochy. Then you get to pick your guy. Yeah. It's a delicate situation to step into. So it's hard for me to think that they would choose like somebody who's untested. I don't know what names are out there, but I could see them going for somebody who's already got experience in baseball front offices.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that Bochy, you know, again, you look at the last 2 years and you can't put most of the performance problems on Bochy. I think we all know that. And his past performance, he's a Hall of Fame manager. You know, if you and I were given this team, I don't think it would be that much worse. It would be worse. But, you know, there still is a little bit of a Bochy effect in terms of their close games, and they have eked out a few wins, maybe more so than last year. I just don't see them firing him over the offseason, and certainly not as we get halfway into next season, considering all he's done for the franchise and the fact that he's just one season left on his contract. I don't see how a managerial change is going to change the performance of the team at this point. If he had 2 or 3 or 4 years left on his contract, sure, I'd say get rid of him now. I'm not that I would want to. What I'm saying is that from a business perspective, it would make more sense if there was more time left on his contract. But at this point, I'd say let him play out the last year, and that's fine. But Bobby Evans, yeah, Brian Sabian has a good track record. Yeah, he has some misses too, but he's certainly pulled some just fantastic deals that have helped the Giants win their World Series. Bobby Evans has not. Yeah, he has just not done a good job. Johnny Cueto, like you said, seemed like a good signing. I'm not saying it's a bad signing, but you know, no one could have seen Tommy John surgery coming really for any pitcher, and that was unfortunate. But Jeff Samardzija, that one kind of shocked me a little bit just because his performance with the White Sox and other teams just hadn't been that great. And then, you know, you're talking about the Matt Duffy trade too.
Yeah, there you go. That was another one.
You know, and I know at the beginning people were like, well, Matt Duffy's hurt. He's going to be hurt for a year. So this was a great trade. Matty Moore did nothing for the Giants. You know, he had a couple of good games down the stretch in 2016, which allowed them to get in the playoffs. So there's a little bit of credit there. But he just flamed out. And then he flamed out with Texas when he got traded to them from the Giants. So, and now Matt Duffy's hitting like .297 for the Rays right now and playing great defense. So he's kind of the Matt Duffy of old right now. He's relatively injury free. And so that one kind of hurts. The Samardzija one just didn't make much sense to me. The Melanson one, that just killed me when they signed him. I really wasn't a fan of the signing only because he wasn't your prototypical flamethrower. He was more of your contact, you know, ground ball pitcher, with a decent amount of strikeouts. But, there were some kinks in the armor, and I was a little worried about it. And then the amount of money that they gave him, which prevented their ability to sign any kind of bat that they needed. They just threw all their ducks in, you know, in one bucket there, basically. And I had forgotten about this until I was reading up on some of these contracts this week, that he has a full no-trade clause. A full no-trade clause. So that's it. I mean, the Giants are locked with him, man. They are locked with him no matter what happens, and it sucks because they got to pay him through whatever 2021 at this point, and that's just ball and chain for the next few years. I mean, he's 10% of the payroll, Eric. 10% of the payroll.
All because the fuck? Yeah, all because they couldn't close out a game in the 2016 playoffs. Yeah. That's why I didn't like the Melanson signing in the first place. And this all probably sounds like 2020, but we could go back to the tapes. And I was not a fan of the Melanson signing. I'm assuming you really weren't either. But, you know, you mentioned that he's not a fireballer. That speaks to how he can't close it out. He doesn't have, like, that killer strikeout pitch, whether it's, like, bum climbing the ladder as somebody. Or Brian Wilson used to have, I believe it was a splitter that would drop out. Sergio with his slider. You know, there's no killer strikeout pitch. I thought when they signed Melanson, it was a time to give, like, Strickland, even back then Law, a chance possibly to close. Like, there was no need to go out and sign a huge closer and spend all that money on them when they could have found somebody in-house. And honestly, the Giants' track record shows they find pretty good relief guys in the bullpen in-house. Yeah, Melanson's one of the few that we can think of that's come over from another team as a signing, you know, like Dyson was picked up off the scrap heap. Watson was a free agent signing. He hasn't faltered. Will Smith, they got in the trade, but you know, he's been fantastic since he got back from the surgery. Maranta's from their system. You know, you can look at guys, Strickland from their system. The Giants don't have a problem developing relievers, and I think they could have developed somebody. So Melanson's stuck being a sixth, seventh, eighth inning guy for I think you're right. Three more years left on the contract, or
I believe it's through 2021. Yeah. So he has 19, 20, and 21 left. All at $20 million a pop or whatever it is. Yeah, I think it's 20
million.
And, you know, their payroll is at $200 million. So there you go. That's the 10% right there. Touching upon hiring someone, I don't know enough about GMs to even have a guess of who they might go for. But I will say that I think you're right. I think they'll say, hey, look, we're not going to fire the manager unless something over the top happens this year. So you get your manager next year, like you said. But what's really interesting, and I think McCovey Chronicles is the one who brought this up, like what if they hired someone and they said, okay, you're going to have a couple handcuffs, like not firing Bochy, and you're going to have some restrictions in the payroll because they have so much committed money right now. It's going to be hard for the first couple of years. I wonder if you'll see someone who has the balls to trade Madison Bumgarner in order to make a name for him or herself. Well, okay, it's probably not going to be a woman, but to just come in there and say, I don't want to sit here and tread water and get fired in a couple of years. I'm just going to go ahead and rip off the Band-Aid and actually trade Madison Bumgarner, free up some space, maybe hire, you know, sign a hitter or something like that, get some organizational depth through prospects in the trade and go from there. I mean, obviously it would not be a popular move among the Giants fan base. So that's kind of the backside and downside of it. But at the same time, maybe someone would have the cojones to do that just to see what would happen and kind of give a spark to maybe the future depth of what could, you know, whom could be called up in a couple of years.
As a fan base, we've gone through this when Saves took over and he traded away Matt Williams for
Matt
Jeff
Williams.
Kent.
Yeah, it was a huge one. I was angry. I've never been so angry as a Giants fan for an organizational move. I really was. I was just furious. And of course, in the long term, it really worked out well for the Giants.
Yeah, it did.
So I don't know. I could see that happening. Obviously, you know, he's the cornerstone for the franchise. But at the same time, you know, everyone's getting older. And who knows what's going to happen with Mad Bum. He's still young-ish. But if they really... The thing is that they're looking for a contract extension. And so my fear is if you don't trade him when he still has value and he still has time left on his contract... And then what could be worse is if you sign him to one of those albatross contracts, let's say it's $20 to $25 million per year, and he has those same age-related issues as Matt Cain and Barry Zito and all these other guys who just, right when they sign their contract, within a year or two, they just tank. That's what I'm really afraid of.
I hope for a bum. I'd like to see them hold on to him, sign him to something like 3 to 4 years.
I would.
It just, he doesn't look right anywhere else. He wouldn't feel right anywhere else. I don't think any fan base would be as entertained by him as our fan base is. So, I mean, this is his place, I think, to even win again. He can be part of that bridge. And if that's, like you mentioned, a new GM gets handcuffed with, say, Bochy, Bumgarner, not being able to trade Bumgarner could be another set of handcuffs on him right off the bat. He might be told he can't trade Bumgarner because he's a franchise. Apparently, it was very telling that Bobby Evans was with them in San Diego, but he was not with them in St. Louis, and Larry Bear was on the trip to St. Louis. So who knows what's going on? A week from now, we could be doing a podcast about the fact that the Giants are making a change. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know. It sucks though that none of the Evans moves have worked out, and it's hard to think that all falls back on Sabian, because we all want to just be thankful for what Sabian brought to this team.
I would like to understand why Brian Sabian does not want to be the GM anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, he could take that role again, but clearly he doesn't want to. He has stepped in a little bit this year to take over, or at least share the role with Bobby Evans, but there haven't been anything done of significance this year, I would say. You know, not too significant. Obviously, they traded away McCutcheon after they realized the season was over, but other than that, there hasn't been too much on that front. But clearly, he wants to step back into the shadows again, so hey, look, whatever is personally going on in his life, or he just doesn't want to deal with the the negotiation aspect of it. He doesn't want to be in the war room. I don't know, but clearly that's a need the Giants have, and Bobby Evans seems like a nice guy, but that doesn't matter when you're talking about moves that are just failing. You know, it's just one after another, and track record speaks for itself.
I'm not even kidding, though. I didn't even think about it. It's been so knee-jerk to kind of, like, back Bobby Evans over the last few years that until you brought the subject up just now and I just started going through moves in my head, I'm like, well, that didn't work out. Like, you really see that there's a lot of moves that didn't work out. The Giants haven't made all the right steps over the last few years by any stretch. They've made a lot of wrong ones.
Yeah,
and somebody's got to be held accountable, I guess. And it's not going to be your three-time World Series manager who's going to the Hall of Fame, or your three-time, you know, executive who should be in the Hall of Fame. It's going to be Bobby Evans.
Yeah. Oh well, someone's got to fall on the sword.
Yep.
he's gonna be the guy. So, all right. So you wanted to talk about the Willie Mack Award, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's I believe it's Friday that they'll be giving it away. I think it's been Orange Fridays they've been doing it the last few years. So, I think last year Hundo won it. I don't know who won it in 2016. Maybe that was Duffy year, or Duffy was 15 when he was a rookie. But, like, who you got for the Willie Mack Award winner? I'll tell you, I had Pablo, and then he got hurt. Mm-hmm. I thought Hundley possibly, but I'm starting to lean towards Gorky's Hernandez. I think Gorky's could win the Willie Mack. I mean, the guy had no homers last year. Yeah, he had no homers last year. He's hit 15, 16 this year. He's started. He's come off the bench. He's done everything the Giants have asked him, and he hasn't been sent down at all. And I'm sure all of the teammates recognize that. He seems like a big enough personality that he connects with a lot of the guys in the clubhouse. So I'm going to go with Gorky's. I think Gorky's is going to win it, and my backup would be Derek Rodriguez.
Those are not bad choices. Like I told you in the beginning or before the show, I was a little bit of a softy. I'm leaning Hunter Pence. He's won it before, so there is precedence there. Although there have been multiple winners in the past. I was just looking up the list. Benji Molina won it consecutive years in 07 and 08. So it has happened before. Hunter Pence won it in 2013.
Bumgarner, everybody just 14. Felt sorry for Benji back then in 07, 08.
So,
like,
right?
Sorry the Giants suck so much. We know you're better than this, man.
I know. Duffy in 15. Crawford and Javi Lopez both shared it in 2016. And then, yeah, you said Hundo last year. Just because it's a swan song, that's all. I mean, and he still is valuable with the team. You see him interacting with the rookies and all call-ups and everything like that. He's always there. He's always lending a hand. He's always talking to the rook. He's always in the dugout cheering on his teammates. He just has this incredible spirit, which I think a lot of the Willie Mack Award kind of encompasses, that I do think he just kind of fits it being this year. Now, if he had another year left with the Giants, no, I probably wouldn't give it to him. So someone like, you know, Gorky's is definitely up the list. And I totally was with you with Pablo before he got hurt. The spark he brought back to the team and the exuberance in which he seemed to play the game again, and all the interviews where he's just so thankful for being back in San Francisco and it feels like home and all that. Yeah, I think it would have been him. And I think his injury happened a little too early in the season for them to give it to him. You know what I'm saying? If it happened, you know, a few weeks ago, I think he'd still be kind of the right fit. But
Pablo was such a bright spot this year. He was so much fun. It's like hard to remember that now that they're 4-16 in September. But Pablo was so much fun back in June and July. I mean, this is a team that was 50-48 at the All-Star break. They were over 500, so we thought they had a chance. You know, Pablo went down shortly thereafter or shortly before then. You know, he was a great little spark. He was a great spark. Coming off the bench, filling in for Longo, playing first when he needed to. You know, he'd be winding down the year playing first right now with Belt being out. It wouldn't be Garcia out there. Mm-hmm. I miss Pablo. I hope they bring him back next year.
I think another guy that would have been a good candidate until his intentional talk appearance, his semi-racist appearance, I think Derek Holland would have been a good choice. But I think that ship sailed once he had that appearance. They can't give him the Willie Mack Award after that, unfortunately.
No, it's hard to do.
You can't. They would be called out on that. I think those are all good choices, and I think the Giants, you know, could surprise us with something. We'll see. You know, you got to think, you know, you're looking at the roster here. It's got to be someone that, you know, has been on the roster most of the season, right? That kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, just kind of looking over. I'm not going to give it to Bumgarner at this point. Like I said, Holland until his appearance. All these relievers. There's just been too many relievers. There's no one that really just sticks out in my mind. I mean, maybe Will Smith, even though he didn't come back till May, just because he came back from Tommy John surgery and all that.
I wonder if he's a surprise, like, dark horse. Like,
yeah,
we have no
I think
idea
Will Smith
how...
could be a dark horse.
Yeah.
Chris Stratton, he just hasn't been with the team enough. No, I don't, that's not in there. Crawford's won it before. I don't think he's there. Belt, probably not.
No, he's
certainly not
win.
Not Longoria, even though he's been with the team the entire year. I don't see that.
Although I could see Longo as a candidate for next year. Like, say yes. He puts together like a really good season next year and helps the Giants to I don't know, you know, something better than this. I could see him as a candidate.
So that'll be interesting. That's a good call. Good question. Okay, so the Braves did clinch the East. The NL West is still up for grabs, like we talked about, and the wild card is still between Milwaukee and St. Louis. In the American League, of course, the Indians wrapped it up, the Red Sox wrapped it up, the Astros look like they're about to wrap it up because they're just the lead's too big over the A's. And it's going to be the A's and the Yankees in the wild card. It's just a difference of who's going to be hosting it right now. I think they got a game and a half separating them two. So it does lean towards... the Yankees hosting that one game wild card game. But I think this kind of ties into an interesting point. I saw this article where they were referencing John Smoltz, and you know, I really respect the guy. He's really smart, especially when you see him on TV breaking stuff down. Obviously, he's a Cy Young Award winner, World Series winner. I think he's just a really cerebral kind of guy. And I mean, look, you know, he was there with Maddox and Glavin and that whole three-headed monster. But he himself said, look, this game that I love has just come to a point where it's almost unwatchable. I mean, he's saying this stuff, right? It's pretty brutal. But he's like, I feel bad for the fans, you know, everything from the multiple strikeouts to the lack of hitting to the defensive shifts taking away those hits to the long innings because, you know, of all the pitching changes and the specialties and the left-handed this and the left-handed that. But the biggest thing he was noting was the playoffs. He's like, I know the playoffs were restructured back however many years ago. 2012 is when they put in the second wild card. But it's like, look at the races right now. They've all been over for like a month. There's just no drama down the stretch. And so he has put out the proposition he would love to see the major leagues go to a split season schedule just like the minor leagues do. And of course, this did happen during the strike year of 1981, I believe it was, in which they had a split season. And I think it's an interesting thought. And so I just wondered what would you consider the pros and cons of a split season to be?
Well, I mean, I think it's intriguing, but what if you have a team that ends up with the most total wins, yeah, but doesn't win either half? And that's the biggest thing. And the Cincinnati Reds did that in 1981. They won the most games total, but since they didn't win either half of the split season, they didn't go to the playoffs. They didn't win a World Series. They didn't get a crack at it. And the Dodgers ended up, I think, winning the World Series. Yeah.
Yeah, they did in 81.
Yeah. To me, that's the one big argument against it. I also get where Smoltz is coming from, that this year it's totally decided, but it's not like that every year. I feel like every year or every couple of years something happens and it's like, oh no, you know, so we got to tweak it because this one thing happened, you know.
Right.
Game 162 in 2011. And but like with the wild card, I mean, there's still a race in the NL, but it's kind of almost over with as well. I don't know. I can't see. It'd be interesting though. I mean, if you're a team that you just want to go all out for the first half and then rest your guys in the second half, knowing you're in the playoffs, I mean, that's a whole new strategy on things. That's a totally different kind of baseball, and I'm not sure I'm ready for that. Something. Mm-hmm. Does need to be done with the shifts. I was talking about it earlier. Balls that, you know, would get hammered up the middle. You're like, oh man, no, there's a guy right there. You know, it'd be nice to see those be hits again. So I applaud him for his radical idea. I just think it's too radical because I mean, there's just too many flaws with something like that.
Yeah, I've always considered myself a purist. I just love the way the game has always been structured. I guess I just never imagined seeing this much of a change in the actual game. And by change, not for the good, not for the better. Like you said, just the shifts, the higher strikeouts because of launch angles to beat the shifts, and just kind of that whole analytical side of things coming into play. The season drama or lack thereof, yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. Since they put in the second wild card in 2012, I think this is really the first season I can remember where all the divisions were pretty much wrapped up. You know, almost all of the races were wrapped up so early. So I think you're totally right. I just think this was an outlier of a season. I think there are plenty of seasons, if you look back, like you said, Game 162, the extra playoff game, those kinds of things. They've been happening. They've been happening almost every year. That was the whole point of the second wild card. Because it adds more teams into the race. And it's definitely added a ton of drama over the past several seasons. So, unfortunately, it's the haves and the have-nots when it comes to the divisional races. And that's the problem, right? And a split season could offer some interesting intrigue in that regard. Because look at Oakland. You know, they're going to make the playoffs as a wild card. But they clearly have the best second-half record in the AL West. So they would be locking that up, and they'd play Houston for the NL West title in a three-game series if it was patterned after, you know, the 81 series. But yeah, that's a major drawback, is that you could have a team that finishes a game behind first place in each half, but overall has the most number of wins, which did happen to the Cincinnati Reds in 1981. And it's bupkis for them. It's just like, well, that's kind of jacked up. So if they were ever to consider a split season schedule, what I would encourage them to do is to have a mechanism to prevent that from happening. And what I mean is, like, they already have wild card now, right? They didn't have wild card back in 1981. Even though you do conceivably expand the playoffs with the split season schedule or split season playoffs, I think in the event of a team that has the best record overall, they've got to be incorporated into the playoffs somehow. I don't have that structure in front of me or in my head, but it's got to be at least a one-game play-in. It's got to be a wild card game. It's got to be something like that. You know what I'm saying?
The funny thing, too, though, is the system that we had before the two wild card system, the one wild card system, would be way more entertaining right now.
Isn't that ironic?
We'd be rooting for the A's and the Yankees against each other and the Cardinals and the Brewers against each other, because we wouldn't be thinking, oh, it's going to come down to a game between these teams. We'd be like, shit, one of these teams ain't getting in.
That's right.
You know,
especially
on the American League side. Could you imagine if the Yankees or the A's don't get in? They're both totally qualified to make that. And under the old way, this would be more entertaining right now. So, you know, it all balances as to what the current climate is in the game. Man, that'd be so much more fun than what we got right now.
Well, I would say the last week of the season would be more fun, but it is still structured in a way where all of that drama is now concentrated into one game, because all four of those teams look like, well, certainly the A's and Yankees are going to play each other. That's a guarantee. Yes. The NL, most likely the Cardinals and the Brewers will be playing each other. So it does distill all the drama into literally just that one game. It's just a matter of who hosts it now. But yeah, it is ironic that they would have been playing a little bit more like the A's could say right now, hey, if the Yankees beat us or we lose to whomever, we still got a game. We're going to New York, but we still got a game. So there's a little bit of that pressure's taken off in a way. But you're right. If it was like, if we don't catch the Yankees, our season's over, you know, it's going to change the way the game is played in this last
and
week.
Home field doesn't matter in the wild card game. The Giants
Have proven that. Oh my god.
Like overall, I believe the road team has won like one or two more games than the home team, and again, I know the Giants have a big part of that, but I mean, that doesn't even matter. So there's no drama this year with it. It just sucks. It's boring. It's just one of those years. Yeah, you know, if there was one other team that was good, And like the Rays, they've won 80-something games. They're going to win 90-something games, and they're not going to make the playoffs. They're not even going to finish within a week of the playoffs.
Yeah, they were one of the teams that would have made when they said they would have qualified during a split season, or they have a chance to qualify for the split, you know, if there was a split season schedule. Anyway, it's interesting thought, but no matter how much is going to change in baseball, that's one thing I don't think is going to change anytime soon is the playoff structure. They may add another wild card or something, or realignment when they have more expansion teams down the road. I don't know. But, yeah, I think a split season is probably a little too much to ask. The modification of the shifts is interesting because Manfred has definitely talked about it. I just don't know how they implement it. Do they add?
I don't know how you do that.
Yeah, I mean, now you're going to have umpires out there, and I think we touched upon this like a month ago, kind of going, hey, no, you got one step over the second base line. You can't be there. You'd be like, what? There's no line here. How can you tell? Or you crept on the pitcher was about to throw the ball, and you crept over the line. You know, I throw a flag. Like, what's going to happen here? Like, and the guy catches it, and the umpire goes, I'm nullifying that out. He goes to first because he crossed the line before the pitch was thrown. Like, it opens up this whole can, which is not good for the game, I don't think, unless there's a perfect way to implement it that I just can't think of. Because then now you're going to have replay, and you're going to have arguments about that, and then you're going to have extra base runners, and it's going to make the game longer. It's going to be weird, man. Here's the stupid way
they're going to implement it. They're going to make a rule that you can only have two fielders on either side of second base.
Yeah.
Right. And they're going to force the umpires to police that. That's what I think is going to happen. That's going to be the dumb-ass solution they come up with in the next year or two. And I hate it because I don't like telling the defense where to position their guys. Yep. But I'd love it if it opens up some holes in some places where guys would be getting hits. And it'll take away from guys playing short right field and deep right field. I hate that. I hate when a guy hammers one that you know would have, like, put a hole in a second baseman who was standing there. But nope, he's 35 feet deeper, and he's going to field it on one hop and throw you out by, you know, six steps. Like, that's not entertaining at all. Like, good for you. You did your job. You got the out. But, like, as a fan, I don't want to see that. That's boring. That's boring.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think that's probably the only reasonable way they could implement it is basically only two fielders on each side of the bag. So what you could see is your first and second baseman, shaded in whatever fashion they want. And then the shortstop is basic playing kind of behind second base up the middle, right? But they're not on the other side of the bag, or they're with a couple feet to the left or something like that. And then third base is playing where the shortstop is, you know, or hugging the bag and you leave the 5-6 hole there. But it's a tough nut to crack, and I just don't know if it's going to have any significant impact in the game itself, because I still think you'd see the second baseman on those shifts playing, like you said, 35 feet deep, even if the shortstop wasn't where the second baseman would normally be or shaded towards the bag a little to the left. So you still have a hole there potentially, but they're still going to have the statistics to show where that second baseman should be. Maybe he shifts a little bit towards center in that deep spot so he can still make the throw, but other than that, yeah, it's a tough one. It's interesting how this game has evolved, but like you said, it is cyclical. So I think within hopefully 5 years, things will start swimming back the other way when there'll be this revolution of speedsters coming up. Like, right?
Yeah. What happened to hit them?
You're gonna have the St. Louis Cardinals from the '80s suddenly hitting the playoffs.
Slapping balls into the ground and running around.
Oh, you want to shift? Okay, boom. They have this whole, like, they have four guys who know how to expertly, you know, Tony Gwynn the ball or Ichiro the ball to the left.
We've
right?
been waiting for it for years, right? For one team to come along and just, like, screw everybody's shift up.
Yeah. Oh, that would be awesome. Love to see it. All right. Well, today's date in Giants history, I actually couldn't find anything for September 24th, so I'd actually back up a couple of days to Saturday, September 22nd in 1969. Willie Mays becomes the second player to hit 6 on home runs. And then on September 22nd in 2004, Barry Bonds was intentionally walked 4 times in a 9-inning game, which was an MLB record that he tied for the second time that year. It happened again earlier in the year in May. So those are your two dates in Giants history.
I think that Willie Mays one was a pinch hit against San Diego. My dad, that scorecard is somewhere on one of my mom's walls. My
Are
dad
you serious?
Had that scorecard. Yeah.
Oh, that is so awesome if you have that.
Yeah, oh, scorecard is somewhere. It's somewhere. And picture of Willie, article about the game. Yeah. Yeah, I think that was against San Diego. I think it made it a 3-2 game. It gave the Giants the lead or something like that. Pinch hit home run in the 7th or the 8th inning.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So injuries, we can talk about Brandon Belt. He tried to play through his knee pain, but they just shut him down for the year. They don't want him to injure it any further. There's no reason at this point. You know, here's a guy who thought was well on his way to 20 home runs this year. And he's not even going to get to 16. It's sad, but it keeps happening to this guy every freaking year, Eric. every year he shows these flashes and we think, oh, this is the year. This is the year. This is the year. And it just never manifests. And yeah, so I think he's, you know, I totally neglected to talk about him when we're talking about Bobby Evans, but I think he's definitely trade bait potentially for a new GM next year.
Absolutely. You know, if you want to start blowing it up, you can go there. You can panic. You know, if you need to go around Bumgarner, Belt and Panic are the places to start. And it might be time for Belt to get a new environment.
Yeah, I love the guy. I love the guy. I want him to be on this team. But he just, every single year, just can't consistently stay healthy to produce the numbers that he is sometimes on track to produce. And, you know, being a first baseman in this league is a power position. And you got to be able to hit 20 to 25 a year. You have to, and knock in 80 to 90. And he's just, like I said, he'll have a month where you're like, wow, he might hit 25, 30 home runs this year if he keeps this up. The problem is he just can't keep anything up.
So, no.
Unfortunate. All right, so let's talk about who's hot. There's not a whole lot going on right here, and these are all people hitting in the 300s, folks. This is what we're reaching for. This is the bottom of the barrel. Chris Shaw, 7 for his last 19. This is all over the last 7 days. Hunter Pence, I talked about him earlier, 5 for 14. And Aramis Garcia, he's been playing well after he's been called up after the Posey injury. 7 for 22. He's got 3 bombs this year. So I think you said, what, he went 0 for 4 one day and came back the next day. So he's showing
a little bit of resolve. Yeah, that's pretty impressive to do that as a young player.
Not bad. And then Suarez had 2 starts this week, 12 and two-thirds innings with a 2.84 ERA. There really wasn't any impressive pitching performances other than that this week, and certainly bad ones by some of the pen. Who's not? Got a long list, but I'll just talk about 3 of the worst. Blanco, 3 for his last 20. Ugh. Longoria is in a bit of a slump, 5 for 27. And Joe Panic, 5 for 23. So, and again, some of the pitching is like 2 or 3 innings worth, so I'm not listing those. It's not important.
I missed Joe Panic.
Yeah, where who took Joe Panic? Well, the real Joe Panic, please stand up. I know. Another guy, you don't expect him to hit 20 home runs a year, but you expect him to be healthy and hit his, you know, 290 kind of thing, play solid defense. And again, he's not the Joe Panic of old. So
no, I thought he'd be fighting for batting titles at this point, and he's just...
he's just not doing it. So,
nope.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think those two are prime candidates to be traded next year. Again, you like them as people, but at this point, you can't keep people on your team because you like them. That's just not how the system
Hanson
works.
Is, yeah, they're trying to showcase Hanson and his worth right now. I mean, Panic played first yesterday, I believe he started, or Saturday. Joe Panic started at first for the first time in his professional life. So, you know, they're trying to give other people looks at places. So that can't be good news for Joseph if they're moving him over so they can get a look at Alan Hanson.
Right. Well, this is it, folks. Closing out the season this week. 6 games left. 3 at home against the Padres, and then 3 at home against the Dodgers, and then that's it. So hopefully the Giants do have a reason to beat the Dodgers this coming weekend, other than just because they're the Dodgers. Hopefully there's actually some playoff implications. Hopefully the Giants can help the Rockies get in. And the fans out there who were upset when the Giants had beaten the Rockies a couple of days in a row at home, last week or 2 weeks ago, and they were saying, what are you doing, Giants? First of all, the Rockies had already swept the Giants in Colorado the week before. So as a whole, the Rockies took 4 out of 6 from them. And over the season series, oh my God, it was bad. I don't have it in front of me, but I think the Giants lost 12 or 13 games out of the 19 against the Rockies. So don't give us any lip about the Giants not helping the Rockies this year. The Giants helped the Rockies probably more than any other team this year. So yeah, you can't be upset because, you know, the Dodgers might win the West by 1 or 2 games, and you're focusing on the 1 or 2 games the Giants actually won this year. So don't give me any of that. Plus, these major league teams are not going to lie down. These guys care about the Dodgers. They don't care about the Dodgers as much as we do. I'm sorry. It's just not. They're playing out there. They're going to give it their all. They're never going to fold. They're never going to give in a game going, hey, we should let the Rockies win because that might prevent the Dodgers from winning the West. That's just not how it works, people. So hopefully y'all understand that.
We need this season. The Giants haven't hit. The Giants are the only team in baseball to not hit a grand slam this season. The Angels hit one the other day. So it leaves just the Giants. So we need Hunter Pence to hit a walk-off grand slam to knock the Dodgers out of the playoffs in game 162. That's the only way this season can end. That's my request.
There you go. Something magical to end off Oh, that would be kind of nice. Hit the light standards, even though it's a day game, and you know, have
why the hell not? Get the natural thing going.
Get the natural. That'd be sweet. And then I get sent off with a speech, and the Dodgers can go sulk in the clubhouse after they get eliminated from the wild card team.
Yes.
That would be nice, but unfortunately, the Dodgers do have a little bit of an advantage coming down the stretch here. Let's just hope that they blow it, and the Giants help them do that. All right, well, you can follow us all over social media. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. Go to our webpage where we post all of our episodes, TortureCast.com, and you can find us all over the internets in terms of where you get your podcasts. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and YouTube and iHeartRadio and Spotify and everywhere else. It's kind of fun to experiment and jump around all the different places and see how they sound. So I'd encourage you to go ahead and subscribe if you haven't already, if you're just finding us right now. We got one more regular season podcast left. Next Monday, we'll wrap up the season, preview the playoffs. In fact, I believe the NL wild card game is first on Monday night. So we'll be kind of on a few hours before that game. So it'll be fun to talk about that. And then Eric and I will certainly be here during the playoffs. The frequency is yet to be determined. Kind of depends on our schedules and how the playoffs are going, because I got some travel coming up too. But definitely look for us. And then as we head into the off season, we'll be recording sporadically when interesting shit happens, basically.
Yeah, that's the best way to put it.
Yep. Well, Eric, you got anything?
No, I'll probably write a wrap on the season, but after the season ends, after the Giants go 6-0 and walk off with magic unicorns.
I love that thought. All right, well, for Eric, this is Chad King signing off for episode 155, and we'll see you next week for episode 156. A-boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TortureCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.